Dominion Higher Education will come to order and a quorum is present. Before we begin, I would like to adopt the A4 delete everything amendment that we walked through last hearing. Senator Kupek moves the A4 amendment. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? With a 1-0 vote, it moves. The amendment is adopted. Before we go to amendments, I'd like to make some brief comments about the omnibus before us today. I'm proud to be carrying this budget bill, which takes responsible steps to balance our financial aid programs in the face of a challenging budgetary landscape. First and foremost, the proposal stabilizes the state grant program by investing in new resources and making fair, measured adjustments to the state grant parameters. We can keep this program whole through the 26-27 biennium. According to OHE's cost projections that are in members' packets, these changes are estimated to leave a balance of $25 million at the end of fiscal year 27. We've allowed any balance to remain available until fiscal year 29 to mitigate the impact of potential future rationing in the tails. The parameter changes in this bill are carefully designed to avoid putting the burdens of cuts on any one subset of students more than another. Some things are by keeping the minimum student aid index value at negative $1,500, which protects the lowest income students from being punished the most. Preserving differential rates of the assigned family responsibility ensures that the state grant will continue to account for the unique needs of student parents and independent students. We're clarifying statutory rationing language, which will ensure that if future rationing is needed, it will be fair and predictable for students and colleges. We also changed the state grant parameters in a way that doesn't pass massive costs onto other state programs, keeping Minnesota's financial aid landscape strong and stable. I want to thank the colleges, especially the students, who have tirelessly shown up at the Capitol to emphasize the importance of both the state grant and North Star Promise programs. Legislators from both sides of the aisle have heard you. Without your advocacy, crafting this budget would have been much more difficult, and we thank you for sharing all of your stories with us. I'd also like to briefly speak about the rest of the budget. We had to make some really difficult decisions, and of course, no one wants to cut any program, but as chair, it's my responsibility to ensure that our higher education budget focuses first and foremost on our mission, which is to serve our students. I think members can see that we've reallocated existing base funding in a way that prioritizes this mission, and we were able to avoid cutting operating funds to our public and tribal institutions, which is necessary to avoid huge tuition hikes and cuts to programs and jobs. We've increased funding for post-secondary childcare grant program to help more student parents stay enrolled and complete their degrees, and we're investing in expanding the hugely successful direct admissions program so that every Minnesota high school graduate knows that they are college material. And I'm very happy to say that we fully funded the Fostering Independence Grant, keeping that promise to our state, that our state has made to foster students. And there's a lot more I can say to the bill, but I'll stop there for now. I'd like to thank the members of our committee for engaging in productive and challenging conversations this year. I'd also like to thank especially Ranking Member Duckworth, which I've enjoyed continuing working with you. And I thank you for the constructive way you've contributed to this committee and our weekly meetings that we've had throughout the session. With that, we'll move to amendments and discussion to the underlying bill. I'll start by offering the A8 amendment, which makes some clarifying technical changes, and Mr. Watson will provide the walkthrough. And the pages will pass them out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This A8 amendment makes some technical changes to the bill on line 1.3. It's clarifying that a $50,000 administrative appropriation is available to OHE annually, so for both years in the biennium. 1.4 fixes a typo. 1.5 also fixes a typo, makes a technical change. And 1.6 and 1.7 adds language that provides that no additional compensation will be provided for participation in the enrollment fraud working group.
Thank you, Mr. Watson. Senator Mover Baton moves the A8 amendment. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Members will now move on to other amendments. Senator Mover Baton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start with the A7.
Senator Umar Vane offers the A7. Can we have them passed out?
Thank you.
Senator Umar Vane, would you like to describe the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we did the walkthrough on Tuesday, I had a question about how rationing would work. This is, let me make sure I pull up the language where that is in the bill in the A4 amendment. It's begins on lines 47.7. So this is how, if there's an insufficient appropriation in the state grant, this sort of governs how OHE will do the rationing. And the agreement that we came to is that a surcharge could be added that would allow the assigned family responsibility to go up above 100 so that all those modifiers that we have in place would stay intact. But my question was this language clear enough that the surcharge would actually have to be an equal amount to keep those modifiers intact? And so this is just clarifying language that the surcharge can't be based on the student status as a dependent student, independent student, independent student with dependents. Because I think those modifiers are really important. And one of the issues that I had with the governor's proposal is that it basically had different surcharge amounts for those categories. There was a really disproportionate impact for independent students with dependents. They were facing basically a 60% surcharge while dependent students were facing like a 21% surcharge. So I think what we came up with here is great, but I think we should be really clear about our intent at the legislature. And this will just clarify that surcharge has to be equal so that those modifiers that are really important stay intact.
Thank you, Senator Mervane, for offering the amendment, which aligns with our intent for the rationing language. So I do urge members to vote yes, and I think Senator Duckworth has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question, just a comment. I think the amendment, and as it has been described, kind of echoes something that I think members of this committee probably tire of me saying repeatedly, which is a student is a student is a student, and treating them as fairly, and I think the word used earlier was equally as possible. So regardless of maybe their circumstance or situation or where they're going to school, I think some level of fairness when it comes to trying to help students and families with their financial obligations is important. And I can see that the spirit of that represented in this amendment as well. And I encourage us to always kind of try to view financial aid and the help to students and families through that lens as we have conversations here in higher education. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Any other comments or questions from members? We will pause for a moment while it's being uploaded online. Thank you. So we'll move on to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Umar Vabain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A9 amendment. And this is sort of following the theme here of making sure that our intention is really clear for OHI in situations where they have a little bit of discretion. So the previous amendment was regarding a situation where there's an insufficient appropriation. This is in the event that there's a surplus appropriation. So that starts on line 47.20 in the bill. Right now, they have the ability, according to the bill that we have, they'd have the ability to either adjust LME or allow the negative student aid index that we currently have capped at 1500 to go a little bit further. My understanding is that the federal government is going to be moving that closer to 1800 in the next year, but we kept a cap at 1500 in our bill. We've just allowed OHI to move to that, basically that federal cap in the event that there's a surplus, which I think is great. One of the things that I discovered and was provided to us last week is just the impact of these different, by tweaking different parts of the formula. And being able to treat negative SAI, negative student aid index, is very important, is especially important for our students who have those greatest needs. And again, under what we saw in the governor's proposal, which would have treated it as zero, there was this really horrible disproportionate impact on independent students with kids. So it's a really important aspect of the formula, and I'm really glad that we're keeping that, we're capping it at 1500, and that we're giving the agency the ability to go to that federal level of 1800 in the event that there's a surplus. All that this amendment is doing, the A9, is instructing OHI to make that adjustment to the federal cap, which again is expected to be at 1800 first before making adjustments to LME. So they have two things they can play around with, but I think the adjustment to negative student aid index is really, really impactful for students, and that should be and very impactful for the students who need it the most. So I'd like to see that adjustment come first in a surplus and then any adjustments to LME.
Thank you, Senator Umar-Rabin. Are there any comments or questions from members? Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I see as we're saying we're going to address any surpluses, would that then have impacts on what we have in our spreadsheet on the carryovers? Would we be burning up any carryover by adopting this?
Senator Umar-Rabin?
I can try to weigh in. I think that what we have in our, again, what we have in our spreadsheet right now is the current cap at 1500, which is great. This is, my amendment isn't changing the language that we have that sort of provides the spreadsheet. It's just being very clear around our intentions if there's a surplus and OHI has some discretion with what parameters to adjust, if that makes sense. So we've kind of set the floor for, you know, how the state grant, how the formula is going to move. But if something were to change and they ended up having a surplus, which would be great, want to make sure the students who need that those resources the most get it, and that's what I'm trying to do with this A9 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Umar-Rabin. Is there anyone from OHI that would like to offer their interpretation of the amendment? Otherwise, Mr. Watson can offer an opinion. Oh, Ms. Oliver, welcome. Thank you. Welcome. Please introduce yourselves for the record, and you may respond.
Good afternoon. My name is Megan Flores, and I serve as the manager of state financial programs for the state of Minnesota at the Office of Higher Education. My concern with the amendment is that it contradicts the earlier part of the law that this group already previously wrote, and I just want to make sure that you're all understanding that the federal law, the minimum student contribution is negative 1500. The minimum student aid index is negative 1,500. The federal FAFSA simplification law, your colleagues in Congress, did not put a floor on the parental contribution. The current parental contribution for the upcoming aid year, the minimum is negative 1,826. So there is a lower threshold for dependent student parental contribution than there is for student contribution in the federal law. And so part of your language talks about the maximum recognized negative contribution of negative 1,500, and then another part, it sounds like you're saying you want to allow it to go lower than that, which I just wanna make sure you're understanding that only impacts dependent students unless there's a change to federal law through congressional action.
Senator Movement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I did get that clarification from y'all earlier, but that's why the language says the lowest student contribution. It's not student and parental contribution, it's just the student contribution on line 1.4 of the amendment.
Chair and Senator Umar-Barbaden, for dependent students in the Minnesota state grant formula, we don't look at the student contribution at all. In the state grant formula for dependent students, we look at the parental contribution. So I just wanna make sure that we're helping align the language with what the intent is.
So she needs this to say parental.
So if your goal is that you want to recognize, it sounds like, if I'm understanding, please feel free to clarify, in the event of a surplus up to you'd like to insert something where we're recognizing the lowest parental contribution under federal needs analysis. Because right now, the way the other part of the law is written, we already recognize the lowest possible student contribution.
Thank you. And I think Mr. Watson, would you like to add anything?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I think the intent in this language is in the event that there's a surplus, to direct OHE to recognize 100% of the parent or student contribution for dependent and independent students. But then the language at 1.3 to 1.4 sets a lower limit that says you can recognize 100% of the negative parental contribution or student contribution to a limit that is equal to the lowest student contribution. So I believe the idea that Senator Umar-Barbaden and I discussed was that because the parental contribution may go lower, to have OHE recognize for both groups, independent and dependent students, up to 100%, but to stop it at that student contribution line.
Chair members, I just want to make sure, again, to reiterate, it will always be negative 1,500 is the very lowest it can go for the student contribution unless federal law changes. The parental contribution is currently negative 1,826. There's nothing in federal law that prohibits it from going even lower. And I do believe that earlier up in the law, there already is something talking about that OHE must recognize the maximum negative student contribution, and that for students who have zero or any negative SAI, we're required to recognize 100% of that. So that's just, I think, where I was confused.
Thank you, Ms. Lund. Mr. Watson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're on the same page on this. Yeah, this is for future changes in federal law where the student contribution may go lower. And
Senator Umar-Barbaden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, this is helpful. I think why I wanted this language written this way as well is because it would address whatever that cap would be for the student contribution at the federal level, because what we have in the underlying bill says 1,500, like it actually uses those numbers. So I think this language would allow that flexibility only in a surplus, but it also will align with whatever that federal cap is.
Mm-hmm. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you. And Senator Farnsworth, this is why we can't get rid of Algebra 2 as a K-12 standard. I'm just going to trust y'all. No, I'm just kidding. Anytime the government's putting negative numbers into bills, it's confusing. All I want to say is this. I can appreciate where everybody's coming from. I was going to ask OHE to come up here and give their thoughts on it. What I want to make sure doesn't happen, Mr. Chair, that we're being mindful of is that we don't recreate a situation that happened like this last summer where all of a sudden we had only really one bucket to start pulling funds from. And if we start changing parameters or we make them more generous for some students than others, and all of a sudden we take that state grant bucket and we drain it because we're changing qualifiers and modifiers and it goes elsewhere, and then all of a sudden we find out that we've drained that bucket almost empty and now there's less of it to go around to other students or families. So that's the only comment I'll make in regard to this. I'm happy to hear some feedback from y'all if you have thoughts on what I just shared, but I want to make sure that we learned a lesson there and that we're protecting against that in the future.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Any other members? Senator Utke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to go one step further on this question about the surplus. When do you look, way this is written, when would you look at the surplus? After the forecast? We have February, we have November forecast. Is it after the biennium? And the reason you bring this up is we've got a perfect example going now. You know, depending upon how this session ends, we should have a little money left over after this biennium, but we then go into a big deficit. Would this allow extra money to be paid out heading into a deficit? How far out do we look to make sure we're not taking excess of money?
Ms. Flores, would you like to respond?
Chair. Senator, yes, I can answer that question. So we always set the first year of the biennium to the parameters in law and fully fund the parameters, and then we project out what's possible for the second year of the biennium. And so it would be in that second year of the biennium that we would, if there was a surplus, we would reinvest it back into the program.
Is that okay? Any other members? Senator Rarick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, with a little bit of the confusion around it and some of the discussion we've had, I would, I'm not going to support the amendment at this time. I would like to see, like I said, we've seen some of these issues. Let's let that money carry over and we can potentially use it. And if, when we come back and we see that there's extras, then we could do some tweaking with it to use it. But at this point, I'm not comfortable taking this. So I'd be a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And Senator Rubin, to be clear, it's just using the surplus in this biennium to push forward in the next biennium.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chair, I would say the surplus language is in the existing bill. So mm-hmm. I'm actually just trying to provide clarification yep. on how to instruct OHEE to handle that. But allowing them to adjust certain parameters in the event of a surplus is in the existing bill.
Thank you, Senator Rubin, and I would urge a yes vote. With that, any other last comments for members? Awesome. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Senator Kupek. Oh, I'm sorry. You don't. We'll pause for one moment. Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer the A5 amendment.
Senator Farnsworth offers the A5 amendment while it's being distributed. Do you mind going into what the amendment does, Senator?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a request from a constituent. So she discovered that she has a child doing PSEO, and they had hoped to be able to have her graduate from high school and earn her AA at the same time, and discovered that some of the classes at the school she's attending aren't covered under PSEO. So what this amendment would do would be to allow these classes to be covered so that she could graduate with her AA at the same time that she graduates from high school.
Does it include Algebra 2?
Are there any comments or questions from members?
Algebra 2 is already a concept.
I would offer, I would recommend a no vote. This is in the jurisdiction of E12, and we have not consulted with them, but my commitment is with Senator Farnsworth to work on this and with them as well. If there's no other comments, we can go to a vote. Oh, we'll pause one moment while it gets posted online. Amendment is posted, and now we'll go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. No. The amendment is not adopted. Any other amendments? Senator Utke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's bring forth the A6. I'll offer the A6.
Senator Utke offers the A6 amendment. Senator, while they're passing it out, would you like to go through what it is?
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment is in reference to our large animal veterinarian loan forgiveness program. Currently, it got zeroed out, but in the past, you know, it's been as high as $375,000 a year. It is an extremely important part of, you know, the whole program. Coming from the rural area, large animal vets are in, we're in dire need of them. There's a huge, huge shortage. And this is just one tool to help bring, you know, to help build that inventory of our large animal vets back up. It seems like the trend has been small animals because they're a lot easier to work with. And, you know, we know the, how the financial stuff all works with them too, but the importance of our large animal vets is so important, and the need is extreme across all of Minnesota, but our rural Minnesota where we have the large animals, we are really short. And I just hate to see this program go away because, you know, in the world of finance down here, that's a pretty small amount. And I think we could do a tremendous amount of good for the amount of money that's proposed here. We are looking at bringing back in money in $162,000 for fiscal year 2026, and then going up to $328,000 starting fiscal year 2027 going forward through 2031. We still haven't gotten to the point where we came from, but it's a gets us in the ballpark where I think we can do some good. So, Mr. Chair, I would ask for your support.
Thank you, Senator Utke. How do you define a large animal?
Well, it's basically it's your farm animals.
I'm only kidding, Senator.
Yeah, it's your dogs and cats and all of those things.
No, for sure. Thank you, Senator.
Unless you've got a really large one, but no, your farm animals.
Thank you, Senator Uma Rabin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Aki, can you just explain to us, because I think this, I'm assuming the spreadsheet has to balance, where you're taking the money from?
Senator Aki.
Yeah, it's coming out of the increases to, I'm learning something new sitting here. This, you call it OHE, Office of Higher Education. I'm getting used to your short term, but yes, it's coming out of the increases from the Office of Higher Education. You know, actually this, that's my next amendment. I was gonna say where the money was moving, but for this one, there you go, that's it.
Yeah, so Senator Rubin is coming out of the agency administration, and we don't know the fiscal impacts yet, so I'd offer that, I'd suggest that we vote no. Senator Rubin. Any other questions? Okay. Any other member comments? Seeing none, all those in favor for the A6 amendment, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Senator Utke.
Yeah, I do, but yes. Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to order hearing aids for you.
Oh.
Okay. On that note, let's go to the A10.
Senator Utke moves the A10 amendment. Senator Utke, do you like to go in to what the amendment is?
Yep, yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another amendment that reinstates a program that we have seen over the past years that got removed this time around. So this amendment is to reinstate the funding for the United Family Medicine Residency Program. The United Family Medicine Residency Program began receiving funding through the higher education budget in 2012, and this funding has been critical in training new physicians to care for rural and underserved communities across the state. Residents in this program not only spend time during their residency in rural and underserved communities, but they choose to stay in Minnesota and practice in these communities when they're completed. Currently, the United Family Medicine Residency Program has residents practicing family medicine in Cloquet, Grand Rapids, Faribault, Little Falls, Duluth, Sauk Center, Wilmer, and numerous other cities across Minnesota. We need to keep programs like United Family Residency Program, who have a record of community focus and retaining graduates for the state of Minnesota's urban, underserved, and rural communities. Competent medical students need a stable and healthy place to train. Every dollar of this grant goes to pay for salaries of residents and faculty. Maintaining the funding of $501,000 per year is a step in ensuring the program can continue to operate at its full capacity and should be included in the higher education budget this year. Medical education is a vital part of higher education in Minnesota. And fully investing in this grant is essential to maintaining a strong healthcare workforce and ensuring access to healthcare all across Minnesota. And Mr. Chair, I would take, and as long as you've heard that part of it, I would like to bring forth the A11, which is an amendment to this amendment.
Okay. Senator Utke moves the A11 amendment to the amendments. One moment while we distribute it.
What kind of bill did you send us?
Senator Utke, would you like to go into what the amendment does?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this does is show us how we're going to pay for it. And you will see that the A10 was for $501,000 per year. To get to even money, we're at $500,000. So 500 for each year, and then to pay for it, to keep your bill in balance, we are taking the $1 million from the $1 million increase given to Mentex this year. So they were giving the increase, but at the same time, we took away from this other with the United Family Medicine Residency, and if I look at the spreadsheets, I can see where you captured the money as a savings to move it somewhere. So we're bringing it back in to support a really good project, and we keep Mintex whole. So that's the amendment and the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you so much, Senator Utke. Are there any comments or questions or concerns? Senator Duckworth with a concern.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess if we could maybe vote on the A11, then my comments are more to the underlying amendment.
Senator Duckworth, so I'll say Senator Duckworth moves sorry.
Well, I'll move it.
Senator Uckey moves the A11. Yeah, sorry. All those in favor of the A11 amendment to the amendment say aye.
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 Those opposed, the amendment is adopted. Now to the underlying amendment. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. And obviously, I can appreciate the situation you're in where you've got to balance everything within your target. You got a lot of programs, a lot of worthwhile programs to look at, and some can make the cut and some can't. I would just kind of take a holistic approach. If I consider the amendment before this one, as well as this one, large animals, veterinarian, farm animal focus, that's obviously a rural, greater Minnesota type of scholarship program. You start to look at this one too, we're identifying folks that provide care in rural, greater Minnesota. And I would just ask that you maybe give some consideration to the balance of the bill, what areas of the state, what communities we're impacting or asking to sacrifice a little bit given the financial situation of the state and what our budget is. And if there was one of the two that maybe had a chance at finding its way into your bill, this would probably be a good one. I was in favor of both, obviously, but if we're talking about providing care to people, families, out in greater Minnesota and rural areas, this seems like a worthwhile program to try to find a way to continue funding. We're already asking them to take a little bit of a hit in some of the other programs in other parts of the state, so would really urge your consideration in regard to this one as well.
Thank you so much, Senator Clark.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Aki, for this, because it gives me the opportunity to say I know the difference between a barrow and a boar, as I was a champion barrow shower in the Olmsted County Fair many, many years ago. So I am sympathetic and understand this. Just to point out, one of the Minitex has recently received a very large cut from the federal government. And that's part of why we prioritize that. And Minitex provides services throughout all of Minnesota. So they are an underlying resource for all of the state's libraries in schools and our counties. So it is a statewide resource as well. So I really like the United Health Medicine residency. If we could find a different spot, perhaps, but I encourage a no vote, as Minitex is a statewide resource that helps throughout.
Senator Kupick. Thank you, Senator Doran Clark.
Thank you. And weirdly, and maybe I just move in weird circles, but I had a conversation about Minitex earlier in the year. And actually, some of the people that I was talking to said, if we actually, through Minitex, there are ways we could find savings for the rest of the system, because they could provide, instead of some of the schools all doing their own thing, if they worked more together through Minitex, there might actually be an overall savings using kind of the buying power of the whole system to do that. So this is one of those ones with while I do love the other program too, but if there was an investment in this, we could possibly see an overall savings for the entire system.
Thank you, Senator Kupek. And with that, I see no further comments. We know that, go ahead, Senator Utke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I've had the people in from the library systems and such and talked highly of Minitex. They are held whole, even if we do this, but I guess I would leave it open. If there's another spot, you can move a million dollars around. I'm open to that, but I think the program itself is extremely important. So if there's a way that we could do that and move something else, I'm fine. We just picked on an increase here. I mean, they've got a base of 13.4 million per biennium. So it isn't that they're made whole, but this was a $1 million increase. We decided to share the wealth a little bit with this amendment, but I'm open to suggestions if we're able to keep the United Family Medicine Residency Program going.
Thank you, Senator Arkin. I do agree that is a very important program, but we know that Minitex is also they're facing really tough a budget situation, and that colleges and libraries across the state rely on the resources, especially in rural areas. So I would urge a no vote on this, but I'll continue to work with you, Senator Arkin, to find something if possible. With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Any other amendments from members? We're going to take a brief recess while Mr. Watson and Ms. Bursch form a clarifying amendment around the state grant appropriation. Now online, the committee pages are passing them out. Ms. Bursch, would you like to walk through what the amendment does? You can take that one.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So basically, my understanding of how the Office of Higher Education typically applies rationing and surplus procedures is that the first year of any given biennium, they award grants based on the parameters in state law. And the second year of the biennium, they evaluate remaining resources and then choose a procedure accordingly based on what's left. So one kind of conflict that creates with the language in the A4 amendment to Senate File 2483 is that we gave extended availability for the state grant appropriation through the end of fiscal year 29. So if the Office of Higher Education were to apply the surplus procedures, we would not have a balance left to carry forward into those out years, into the tails. So this amendment, the A12, basically just clarifies that the Office of Higher Education should not adjust awards based on a surplus in fiscal years 2026 through 2028 so that they can maintain that balance and carry it forward through the end of the tails. And then if there is any balance left for fiscal year 2029, they can then use that to increase awards.
Thank you, Ms. Bursch. Are there any questions or comments from members? So we'll move, Senator Kupek moves the A12 amendment. Senator Rarick, I'm sorry, moves the A12 amendment. I apologize. It's the Bursch-Rarick amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Now, is there any general comments or questions on the bill? Seeing none, I move that Senate File 2483, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance and direct staff to make technical and conforming changes as well. With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion passes and the bill is referred to Committee on Finance as amended. With no further business, the committee is now adjourned.